Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, shrinking stomachs, changing brains. Discovering the effects of gastric bypass procedures on body chemistry and neurology. And the new land grabbers. A reporter finds out why hundreds of millions of acres are being bought up in developing country and who stands to profit. But we begin with the myth of the lone innovator. Icons of creativity like Steve Jobs and David Packard are romanticized as lone wolves, toiling deep into the night on ideas that one day change the world. Truth is, most get help along the way. Even Thomas Edison had a crew. 40 or so lab workers helped him invent the light bulb. Susie Kim covers economic policy for the Washington Post, and she reported on several scientists promoting a more holistic picture of the people and institutions involved in turning an idea into a product, which could be a key to improve funding. Susie, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
We do mythologize American inventors as these kind of rogues who pushed against the grain. You got a very different picture from academics and heads of labs. What'd you find out?
So it's interesting. I went to an event in Washington that had a number of these researchers, and what they point out is that between, you know, this idea that is born in the head of one person and the product, you know, like the light bulb or Facebook or whatever it is that ends up in your own home, there are whole scores of people, institutions, funding from governments, corporations, other folks, that it's really a collective enterprise that connects, you know, these ideas in the heads of admittedly very smart people to the products that actually change our lives. And that's important to pay attention to that process if we really want to further innovation and discovery in the U.S.
So does the lone wolf thinking actually hurt innovation?
Well, in a way, it does, in as much as, for example, you know, in Capitol Hill, you frequently talk about budgets and how much that even in times of fiscal constraint, we still want to support innovation. And so the interesting thing is, surprisingly, despite all the budget cutting and talk of rising deficits, funding for basic science research, you know, R&D that's looking into just sort of the essential questions that we need to do in whatever field has actually remained fairly constant. The thing that has fallen away, I guess, both on the public in the public sector as well as the private sector, is everything that comes after you make that initial discovery. So if you ignore, you know, if you sort of boil it down to, okay, we just need to support the geniuses in the labs, they'll change our universe, but you ignore everything that they need to get the finding in the lab to commercialize that product, to turn it into something viable, then in effect, you know, that myth does hurt innovation in as much as it doesn't actually acknowledge everything else that's involved in this process.
How about corporations that used to be behind these kind of products? I mean, in the 20th century, we had, of course, the AT&T, Bell Labs. They poured money into development. Have firms become too timid? Have they backed off?
They have backed off, and there are a couple of different reasons why this is the case. There are, you know, some corporations like AT&T actually benefited from the fact that they were a monopoly, you know, and they sort of in exchange for having monopoly power invested a huge portion, significant sums into not only research and development, but being able to turn those research findings into a commercialized product. That was behind Bell Labs, and who, you know, researchers invented everything from, you know, the transistor to laser to information theory, which basically made the internet possible. Now, given the fact that it's a much more competitive environment, not only in telecom, but, you know, in all of these other high-tech sectors, corporations are, you know, have their bottom line to think about. They are willing to invest in research, but if they don't see a return on that pretty quickly, and if they can't commercialize that pretty quickly, it's going to be pretty hard to convince investors to say, you know, oh, maybe 10 years from now, we can't really say what or what exactly will end up happening, but this is sort of a path worth pursuing. So, yes, they have become more cautious, but in the face of these kinds of market pressures in a world that it has made everything much more competitive. So with that falling out, I mean, that has been part of the reason why it's not just the government that has sort of backed away from being able to fund research and commercialize it, but also the private sector as well.
But the government, if you do trace a lot of innovation going on now, there are academic labs that are being helped by the government. Government labs, the Pentagon, DARPA projects, for example. This is something that free market purists point to as bad policy. They look at bad bets like the Solyndra bankruptcy as a reason that government shouldn't try to pick winners and losers. Who then should be picking up the costs?
Well, there are a couple of proposals that try to bridge this gap. And, I mean, the problem is where you get what's known as the Valley of Death, which is where you have maybe a pilot product or something that may be just on the verge of being commercially viable into something that's really commercialized. Yes, you do have free market purists who say that, well, you know, we shouldn't pick winners and losers. We should just let the free market decide what's going to succeed. But if that were the case, then a number of things that have changed our lives, the internet for one, lasers for another, might not have ever happened, because there's some risks that, yes, private investors might not be willing to take, but could benefit the social good. I mean, this is where it definitely gets much more politically complicated, because unlike just funding basic R&D, the kinds of incentives and the kinds of things that might help support commercializing those products end up being much more controversial. You know, you have tax credits, for example, for clean energy.
That expired,
in fact. And so, I mean, and Democrats oppose those for oil and gas. But in fact, some of those tax credits and benefits actually incentivize people to make investments that might not at this moment be viable on by themselves in the market, but might ultimately be viable. And more than that, the idea is that the government should be supporting things that are for the greater social good, and that do have different incentives than the free marketplace, where the bottom line is the number one priority.
So we're seeing some innovative funding models in Maine and California. They're talking about private capital R&D banks. One area still flourishing is technology. It is technology of the lone wolf, is the app economy, still able to thrive while other areas of manufacturing continue to struggle. Why is that?
So in terms of Silicon Valley, and the folks at this event in Washington did agree, this is actually one of the reasons that this the myth of the lone wolf inventor continues to be perpetuated, because digital apps are something that you can kind of just come up with in your college dorm room, that you don't need a lot of people. It's not resource intensive. Startup costs are fairly low, and they don't require as much. I mean, and folks, therefore, private investors are much more willing to take those kinds of risks because the stakes are lower and the investments are lower, versus something like creating a car that can be, you know, tens of times more fuel efficient than the cars we have today, a battery that can last a really long time. I mean, these are things that are much more technically, that in terms of the investments that you need, in terms of the manufacturing, in terms of creating prototypes, you can't just come up with in your college dorm room. They require a lot of much more risky funding. And this is where people, you know, have this debate over whether the government should try to, help connect private investors with the market. And there are hybrid models that don't just mean the government guarantees, you know, the government is just lending this money directly. That there are proposals like creating, you know, a kind of national R&D bank that would allow, use the bond market to help private investors kind of jump in. So there are things that on the state level some folks are trying as well to help encourage private investors and just give them an extra security blanket to convince them to jump in.
Well, Susie, I want to thank you for joining us.
All right. Thanks so much for your time.
Susie Kim, Washington Post reporter. She covers economic policy. And you can find a link to her recent article, How Thomas Edison, Mark Zuckerberg, and Iron Man Are Holding Back American Innovation. That's at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.